This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. This is your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. This is episode 282, and the Cardinals kind of got their get-well game. My co-host is on the line, as always, with us, and that's Seth Cox from Revenge of the Birds. From RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and you know, it wasn't, it's kind of like what I, in terms of a game, is what I expected. It didn't feel like they were, you know, they were putting a beat down, but in the end, it was a boringly dominant game by the Cardinals, and they improved to 3-2, 30-10. There's a lot to like about what happened, isn't there?
Yeah, and you look at, like you said, the outcome, and I think because it got to, what was it, 17-10 at one point, and then all of a sudden you were like, oh, this is a little closer than we like, and then the Cardinals just kind of regrouped and beat them up pretty handily, and so, but it did for a while. You're like, okay, let's put this thing away. Why is this taking so long? And then they had that one touchdown drive, and now you're like, okay, is this? And then, you know, Arizona came back with a pretty dominant drive of their own, really looked good, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, this is what we expected more.
And so, in this edition of the show, recording it on Tuesday night like we normally do, we're going to react to the win. So, what was there to like about the game overall? Definitely, there was plenty of to like. What was there not to like necessarily with the injury news to Chandler Jones? Still as of Tuesday night, we don't know exactly what the plan is, but we'll discuss the options for the Cardinals moving forward. Prince Amukamara was signed to the practice squad on Tuesday. What does that mean now and moving ahead? And then we'll look ahead to a very exciting Monday night matchup against the Dallas Cowboys in a week. Which, you know, you've got one of the best offenses in the NFL in the Cowboys and one of the worst defenses in the NFL in the Cowboys. We will look at the matchups, the loss of Dak Prescott, and the Cardinals' fortune in that game. So let's go ahead and get started, Seth. Overall, what were the things you liked best about what you saw from the Cardinals at MetLife Stadium over the Jets?
I mean, there was a lot to like. I think the first thing that kind of stands out was how, like you said, how dominant the final numbers were. It showed that they put together the complete game that you and I had kind of been talking about that they had been missing basically all season, that kind of complete aspect of the game offensively, defensively. You know, obviously, I think we can go back and look at instances within the game where we would agree that they missed some things, but for the most part we were happy with the outcomes and how things looked, and overall I think that when you look at just the fact that they were able to do so many different things in the game successfully, you know, running the ball, it was their best passing game with Kyler Murray at quarterback. They were able to, you know, protect Kyler Murray really well. I think all of those things kind of lead into just a complete game where you look at it and you go, I definitely can point things out we need to work on, but at the same time, you don't want to overanalyze everything, and sometimes you just want to let those, like, really good games be really good games.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, they got a 20-point win over a bad team. They defensively, the metrics that we like to look at, so kind of those winning metrics that you want to see the defenses do, and Vance Joseph talks about that. It's play on third down, pressure the quarterback, effectiveness in the red zone, and then obviously overall points. Yards gained, a lot of defense, they'll look at that, but that's not for most defensive coaches. Those aren't the critical numbers. And after failing on pretty much every category against the Panthers, they righted themselves defensively against a really bad Jets team, but they were good on third down again, 31% converted. They were good in the red zone. They limited the Jets in that case in the red zone. They sacked Joe Flacco three times and had a few other pressures and hits, and so they got pressure on them again. And obviously, the final score showed that they only gave up 10 points. And you know, you look at the Cardinals' defense in terms of points allowed, they've only allowed 20 points a game, and that's with, you know, a couple of stinkers. Let's be honest, giving up the 31 to the Panthers and the 26 to the Lions, which weren't good defensive performances in terms of points, they're one of the better defensive units in terms of points allowed. Before their game against Carolina, they were, I believe, the number one third down defense. And so those metrics returned, and so it does look like, because even in the loss to Detroit, like we talked about, those metrics that they had, those important numbers, and were good. They just, you know, didn't quite close the book at the end of the game against Detroit. They had the turnovers, which really gave the defense a bad situation. And it turns out that the Carolina game might have been the fluke, or might have been the aberration to their defensive performance. And so I look defensively, and I'm pleased again. And that, you know, the return of Buda Baker was huge. And they did that even without Devon Kennard and with Chandler Jones getting hurt. So I really liked what we saw defensively as a unit.
Yeah, and I think it was, again, a total effort when you look at, and you know, bulk snaps and bulk numbers are never, you know, the best indicator, but sometimes they do tell a little bit of a story. And you know, in this game, I think you saw, you know, defensively, they gave up 285 total yards of offense. That's, you know, that's really, really good. Something that we haven't seen, less than 300 yards this year. I'm going to guess they didn't allow less than 300 yards last year, but I don't know.
Probably not.
They did once. They did once. So, and that went over Seattle, actually. So there you go. But, you know, it's they haven't done it this year. And so it's one of those situations where you expect, you know, maybe that to come out of playing against Joe Flacco and a bunch of guys that you've never heard of, and that Le'Veon Bell that's definitely not trying his hardest, and you know, all of that. But at the same time, to your point, that was what they've needed. I mean, especially coming off a game where they were overwhelmed by Carolina's entire offensive attack. I mean, it was legitimately their worst day at the office defensively. And so to bounce back on the road in a game like that while losing your, you know, best defensive player, maybe not this year, but the guy that has been your best defensive player, your all-pro, you know, edge rusher, man, that's impressive.
And then offensively, you know, up until the kneel downs, they hit the 500 yard mark, and then it ended up being 496 after the kneel downs, or 495 or whatever it ended up being. But they cracked 500 by the end of the game. They hit the 30 point mark. Kyler Murray's career high 380 passing yards. And that makes 2 weeks in a row he had a passer rating of over 100. And he did that even with an interception and only one touchdown pass. It really is interesting that game plan that they had against Carolina, either in terms of, you know, play calling or decisions by Kyler, where it was just dink, 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 swing pass, you know, screen pass. And overall, what, he was 24 of 31 for 133 yards. So he was averaging 4.3 yards of attempt. He had three touchdown passes, had a QB rating of a passer rating of over 116. But then you look at the game against the Jets, when it felt, I don't remember counting the number, but I think it was two like horizontal passes they threw the entire game. And, you know, they pushed the ball down the field, and they had the exclamation points as those two throws to DeAndre Hopkins. And then you look at the final numbers, it's a career high in passing yards for Kyler, nearly 400 yards. He had 380. His yards for attempt was in a ridiculous with over 10 yards per attempt. So you really, really liked to see what they came into that game planning on doing offensively. And maybe it was all the questions, and maybe it was simply that they felt they could attack the Jets down the field with their defensive scheme. They went out and changed the game plan, and it was good. I mean, you can't really complain about much. They incorporated the multiple running backs in the game, something that has been quite successful. They had 127 rushing yards. Chase Edmonds was dynamic. And you had production in the passing game from a lot of guys. You had DeAndre with 6 for 131. You had, I think it was five guys with at least four catches and four with at least 50 yards. Christian Kirk, you know, put up some numbers. It was, honestly, it was refreshing to see. And even though it didn't feel like the offense clicked all day, you see the numbers and you keep wondering, oh my gosh, what could this offense actually do if they were consistent?
Yeah, and that's, you know, kind of where it stands is can they find consistency somewhere? You know, whether it's, and we're not just talking game to game, but we're talking throughout a game. Obviously, you're never going to score on every possession and things of that nature. But, you know, the tweet came out from Greg Allman, I believe it is. I can't remember his last name, but he covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And no team has had more, you know, penalty stalling or stalling drives based on penalties than the Cardinals. And they've had 15, and, you know, three are from Kyler Murray, three are from Justin Pugh, two from Kelvin Beachum. And you look at it and you go, doesn't that say a lot? I mean, it's five games. So you're basically having three a game. And it does feel like there are instances where they're on a roll, a drive stalls out because of a penalty, and then they can't pick it back up for two or three plays. And so they end up, you know, they just end up struggling throughout the game instead of putting together a complete game. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you know, it's tough because this was, like you said, the best game they've had. But at the same time, you felt like they still left way too much on the field.
Right. And we can't go on without bringing up just how great it was to see Dennis Gardecki on the field. And in his first defensive snaps of his entire NFL career, this is his third NFL season, he got to play defense for the first time. And he's playing a new position this year that he didn't practice at the last 2 years, playing outside backer. Now, granted, he played off the edge in college, and he gets two sacks. Two sacks for Gardeck, and now he's got his, you know, he's tied for the team lead in sacks. He's got more sacks than Chandler Jones. It's, you know, I don't expect Gardeck to get significant, if any, defensive playing time after last week, unless it's needed because DK is coming back. It was kind of in a dire situation, but that was fantastic. He brought the effort and the juice and the production. It was vastly needed. It was so needed, and it just shows you that even when it doesn't look like they have great depth, they do have the potential to do some damage, which was fun to see.
Yeah, and they're close. And I mean that drive with DeAndre Hopkins where he had 82 yards was basically what we've talked about in the need of a wide receiver. Now, that was obviously more than we could have expected. But you have to look at just how dominant and explosive this offense can be. And like you said, you're excited for what that potential is. And you know, let's not hide this. They get a team in Dallas that isn't much better defensively than the New York Jets. But they can continue this and build upon what was a very good offensive performance, and maybe they can get to great at the next point.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the – but let's move on. Not everything was great, so what are the things that we didn't like? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. What were the things not to like in that game? We touched on it a little bit. They continue to make mistakes offensively, leading to penalties that put them behind the sticks in terms of the schedule offensively. And as good as we believe Kyler Murray is going to be, he still isn't at the point where he can consistently overcome being behind schedule. And partially, I believe that is a weakness. It's a weakness of every offense, but I think Kingsbury's scheme particularly gets a little flustered when they're behind schedule. That said, I like that they were able to overcome it, but it's still something that you're just like, come on, you guys just can't quite get with it for an entire game.
Yeah, and you kind of watch how they've done it, and you can see that there's that where they need to grow is being able to play from that second and medium a little more often. And you know, if they don't have a positive play on first down, that they can make up for it on second down. And it feels like too often they're chasing and trying to get everything back on second down instead of saying, hey, now we're in third and, you know, third and four instead of third and eight after a 2 yard gain on first down. So I think that's, you know, a lot of it right there is that you just need to find that consistency, and continue to grow it. It's just, you know, it's funny because you look at kind of Kyler Murray's passing charts and his numbers and he's really good, you know, in that 0 to 10 yard range. And he's actually really good in that 20 plus yard range. And he's phenomenal throwing to his left in that 10 to 20 yard range. It's the middle and the right that he struggled with. And isn't it a coincidence that the guy that lines up on the left mostly is DeAndre Hopkins?
Right.
And so that's, I think, where things are struggling is that, let's be honest, there's not been a consistent weapon that can make plays opposite DeAndre so far. And so what you're seeing is a lot of guys struggling to get open, struggling to make plays on the ball. And so, you know, they're running a lot of short stuff, you know, sub 10 yards, and they're fine. But as soon as they get into that 10 to 20 yard range, they're not creating the separation. And that's kind of what we're talking about, is that they just don't have that consistency to get out of second or third and medium, where they just can't you know, really get into back into a manageable spot or, you know, get 8 or 9 yards on third down because they just don't consistently do well outside of DeAndre Hopkins. And so I think that'll be something that we see growth with and continual growth with. The other thing is defensively, and this is, you know, this is the hard part about, as I said, using counting statistics, because they don't account for the drops and the misplayed balls that we saw coming from the New York Jets on offense. And so there were still times the secondary was struggling to keep coverage. You know, I think some of that was that they just didn't have a great pass rush today or that game early on. Obviously, the loss of Chandler Jones was a huge impact on that until they've, you know, were getting something for a Dennis Gardeck. It was just kind of, it was kind of not there from the edges. And so you just look at the entirety of it. They still have work to do, but that's good too, because if this was a finished product, if that's the best that they can play, and I think you and I both agree that's not, but if that's the best that they can play, then I think this is a 5 or 6 win team, because I don't think that's good enough outside of, you know, playing against teams like the Jets and maybe the maybe the Falcons or think, you know, teams of that ilk right now.
And then the one other thing that you have to worry about, and it was something that was mentioned on social media quite a bit, and that was the running of Kenyon Drake. I honestly don't have a lot to complain about Kenyon Drake this year because he's been very workmanlike. And I defended David Johnson last year because when you looked at his numbers, as his usage increased, his numbers increased. And the honest truth is that Kenyon has been able to do well, especially at the ends of games. Now, has he been running a little too east-west? It doesn't feel like he's hesitant. I think the line isn't doing as good a job for him, and I think he's trying to make bigger I think as the season's progressing, he hasn't hit the big one yet. He's becoming a little more looking for that instead of, you know, getting the steady. But that said, at the end of the game, in those final three runs, he hits vertically, and, you know, he finishes off the scoring. He has an 8 yard, he has a 7 yard, and he scores on the 1 yard run. And he was, you know, it was heavy, decisive running up the middle. And, you know, I am not unhappy with Drake because I think his steadiness, even if it hasn't been very good thus far overall, he is been the bell cow. He's the one to finish off games. And I think his play has contributed to the ability of Chase Edmonds to then produce more from the role that he has.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, Chase is a guy running right now like he knows he's only going to get 3 touches, 4 touches in the game. And maybe he's going to get 5. I mean, who knows? But he's not going to get – and Kenyon's running like he's working through 20 to 25 touches. And that's – you know, I think that's something that's hard – to weigh in, because as you said, he's, and I'm not saying he's saving himself. I don't want people to think that, but I think he's saying these guys are fresh early in the game. I'm going to try to stretch them out. I'm going to try to, you know, I'm not going to be able to run through them right now. And then as the game carries on, he starts to, you know, run that more north and south. That's just something he's going to have to work through, or the Cardinals are going to have to be okay with.
Yeah, and I think part of it, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury is more than willing to run the ball, but he doesn't like to run the ball when he's down. And so like we saw last year with David Johnson, the lack of touches and then the lack of production. The Cardinals have had leads, which had allowed him to get more carries. I mean, he had 18 carries on Sunday. That's, you know, if your lead back is getting that many touches, you're usually in a good situation. So even if it isn't ideal in terms of yards per carry, those yards are still productive. It's just not dynamic, and it's not ideal what you want to see a guy you're paying $8.5 million. But at the same time, if he ends up with that 2018 David Johnson numbers of 940 yards, guess what? You're okay with that, and then you can move on from him this year after 1 year, and no problem.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's been the kind of the thought all along. And you know, you look at it, and obviously the 18 carries for 60 yards is less than ideal. And, you know, you take out his 10-yard run, and you're talking about, you know, 17 carries for 50 yards. That's not – let's just be honest. That's not very good. That's a bad day at the office. But, you know, the Cardinals overall, again, had a good day. 30 carries, 127 yards, 3 rushing touchdowns. You know, you combine that with the 180 or 380 passing yards, and it's just it's a balance of offense that you can't really define anything that much or expect that much more, because that's the thing is, something gives. If he is hitting those runs, all of a sudden, okay, so, I mean, you have 407 total yards of offense. Are you – or, sorry, 507 total yards of offense. Are you really going to complain if it's 380 and 127 or, you know, 300 and 200? Like, are we really going to complain about that difference?
Right.
And I think that's what it's getting to, is because you're talking 80 less yards passing if you're more effective running the ball. And I'm not going to disagree that they, you know, you would like to see a more efficient run game. I think that's a fair thing. But overall, you just have to be realistic, too, in the overall outcome.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about Chandler Jones and his injury and the Cardinals' decisions moving forward. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. And Chandler Jones suffered what appears to be a serious injury. He left the game with a biceps injury. You could see he was in visible pain. You could see him with Jordan Phillips trying to make a move, and he grimaced. It was not good. You could tell he was displeased. You usually see that from a player who knows that he's going to miss significant time. While Cliff, and it was, yeah, oddly enough, Cliff Kingsbury actually, you know, normally very coy about injuries and timetables. Even after the game, said if it's what we believe, if it's confirmed, it's going to be season ending. Now, on Monday, they were less informative. Always having the MRI done today. We're just wait and see. Blah 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 blah. As of Tuesday, nothing's happened. Wednesday, I would expect a move for him to be on injured reserve, because even if it's a best case scenario, I don't see him being able to play for at least 3 weeks. And I think they're going to need the roster spot anyway. That said. Chandler Jones, losing Chandler Jones on this defense, how challenging is that going to be? How big a loss is that going to be, taking his presence off the field?
I think his presence, more than anything, will be, you know, missed, because, you know, his production this year has been down, and he was talking about it quite a bit this last couple weeks. And so... you look at the fact that they just don't have an established pass rusher opposite Jones, and that makes the entirety of it pretty tough. Overall, this is a team that has done a nice job of, continually getting after the quarterback this year and has done, you know, a good job of creating sacks. You know, they're top 10 in the league in sacks. Their numbers of pressures and their pressure rate is where, you know, you kind of begin to get concerned. And that's, you know, numbers including Chandler Jones. So I think in the end, their pressure rate, I don't know if it can go that much lower. I mean, you look at it this season, they are, hold on, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th worst. So was that 25th in the NFL in pressure rate, meaning, you know, drop backs, they're getting pressure but not getting a sack. So that's the crazy statistic, is that they have 14 sacks on the season, which is tied for like 7th in the NFL. But they only have 31 pressures on the season, which again is tied for, you know, 25th in the NFL. That's what's crazy to look at and see. So, you know, the fact that Jones hasn't really been a part of that this year, I mean, obviously you're going to miss an All-Pro anytime you lose him, but he hasn't been playing like an All-Pro at this point, and they've gotten by okay. I think it's going to matter more later in the season as you know, he worked into shape a little better and got a little more he was able to get a little more after the quarterback.
And for me, I was really worried about that game against the Jets because of what we saw when there was no Devon Kennard out there. Kennard, I've been bullish on his production all year. I coming into this year, I thought he could be, you know, playing from that outside linebacker in a 4-3, kind of an off the ball, did some blitzing. He managed to have 7 sacks each of the last 2 years. I thought putting him in his natural position, which is, you know, the 3-4 edge, I thought he could be potentially a 10-sack player, and I still believe that. The problem was is when you lose Jones and Kennard and you're stuck with Kylie Fitz, you know, Hassan Reddick and Dennis Gardeck, two of those guys in Gardeck and Hassan, who are undersized for the position, a little light in terms of size and definitely short. You know, Dennis Gardeck, I believe he's 6 foot. Gardeck has been 6 foot. Reddick is 6'3", but he's not a long 6'3" in terms of length with his arms. That said, Reddick has been playing solidly enough and has been relentless enough that at least in the pass rush, he's been pretty effective. The question then begins to be, how long do you want to trust a rotation of Kennard, Reddick, Fitz, and then using Zach Allen on the edge? Now, Zach Allen kind of becomes to me, a Matt Shaughnessy type player in that sense, and it gives you that size and strength off the edge. And he does have a little bit of juice there, but he doesn't move the same. Now, the question is, should they go out and sign a player? There are some names out there that are kind of intriguing, but do you think that they need to go out and sign at least a veteran who's had some production in the past?
You know, it's tough to say because the names are just so bad. I mean, you and I talked about it a little bit beforehand. You have a Clay Matthews who's, you know, he's going to be a pass rush specialist. You've got Cameron Wake, who's closer to your age than my age at this point, I think.
True. He'll be 39 later this year.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, I just can't imagine that another veteran is that much of an upgrade over giving a guy like Kylie Fitz or a Dennis Gardeck, or, you know, this guy Isaiah Simmons. I've heard he's with the team, you know, giving these guys an opportunity to get on the field.
Right, and the one name to me that makes a little bit of sense would be Clay Matthews for two reasons. One, he still has some juice left. Last year he had 8 sacks for the Rams. He played in a Wade Phillips defense, and we know that Vance Joseph runs a Wade Phillips-style defense, and so it wouldn't take much for him to acclimate to the system. He'd be able to come in and do that. Cameron Wake, he was coached by Vance Joseph. That was in 2016, and Wake was not good a year ago, and he's old, and after the Terrell Suggs experience last year, it's really, really worrisome to bring someone of who's well past his prime to do that. We look back to the Dwight Freeney signing and how wonderful that was, but Freeney actually had some juice left in his limited role, and Suggs was playing way too much. Had he been played in a lesser role, perhaps they might have had more success with him. But you know, some of the names out there, Lorenzo Alexander, reportedly the Cardinals had a little interest and he decided, nah, I'm gonna stay home and be retired. But Clay Matthews is out there. Jabal Sheard, he's a guy that would take a little time to get acclimated, but could be there. But honestly, Should this be the case for Isaiah Simmons when we leading up to the draft? And this is the conversation that we had on the show. Is I always felt that what made Isaiah Simmons the ideal pick because he was kind of a project is we knew that he wasn't going to get extensive snaps at inside backer, but because of his, you know, his versatile background, that it was going to allow him to, without being the star, be able to do things like rush off the edge a little bit and be productive, do some coverage stuff and be productive. And it just hasn't seen that. Now, we talked about last week the fact that I said it probably, since the safety void was only 1 week, then maybe it was okay. Maybe it was smart of the Cardinals to not actually run him at safety and try to give him something new to learn, but rather give him a few roles from the linebacker position doing safety things. That said, inside backer, outside backer, the two kind of go hand in hand, and they've used players like that in the past. I think this is the time to make sure that you give him some opportunities to get after the quarterback, and, you know, increase that defensive workload to from that 10 to 15 that he's been getting, or the low teens, to up to give him 5 to 10 opportunities off the edge in specific roles as a pass rusher, to give some of that juice to the defense and see what he can do and get those reps and for anything else so the fans can see him on the field and stop griping about it.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, at this point, you, like you said, you have nothing to lose. You have nothing in-house that should make it so he's not getting at least an opportunity. And so those are, you know, I think those are legitimate thoughts, and they should be things that they explore at this point with, you know, with a really good passing offense that they're going to come up against in the next two games.
Absolutely. So in my opinion is, unless it's Clay Matthews, I think they, as long as you get Kennard back healthy, I think the Cardinals will be able to make do as long as Reddick continues to be moderately consistent in his pressure, Kennard continues to play the way he's been, and that you get the push inside from Jordan Phillips. If you get those three guys, then you can live with, you know, Kylie Fitz getting some time in there and not being great. Although, you know, the coaches have been they've been pleased with him and his upside. Dennis Gardeck was a breath of fresh air, although I don't anticipate him playing much. So unless the name is Clay Matthews, I'm probably going to go ahead and pass. and see what they can do to how to kind of hodgepodge this, because we've already kind of seen it. Zach Allen playing a little bit on the edge, but just add Isaiah Simmons in there. Add him in there because it will increase his value. And if we saw anything from last year when he was at Clemson, if there's two roles for him to have, one would be basically three roles to play. One, cover guys, blitz, and rush. Give him all three.
Yeah, and I think, you know, right now you have that opportunity. He doesn't have to be your main rusher. He can be a guy that does rush at times and then drops into coverage at times. You know, but I think at this point you got to get this kid on the field and give him an opportunity to start playing, because, you know, 50 snaps, 50 some odd snaps in 5 games is just not right.
No. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and let's talk about the new addition to the roster, but it wasn't actually the roster, it was the practice squad. The addition of a veteran cornerback, Prince Amukamara, now in the fold, but on the practice squad. What does that mean now and moving forward? That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Prince Amukamara, an established starter in this league, entering his 10th season. He's started a lot of games. He's familiar to many Cardinals fans because of his time in high school at Apollo High School. The report came out last week that he was expected to sign with the Cardinals, and that, I will be honest, raised some questions. Were they looking to replace Dre Kirkpatrick? Were they potentially going to set themselves up to be able to trade Patrick Peterson? I thought that was a long shot, but the questions was worth asking. Or were they looking for a little bit of more experience depth? And guess what? He signed to the practice squad, just like TJ Ward. So who knows what that means? Were you surprised that it was a practice squad signing and not an active roster signing?
No, because, I mean, with the protections and things of that nature, I don't think it matters. I think the whole idea being that you've seen it throughout the league, and I think one of the bigger ones that we saw this week was last week was the Seahawks signing Damon Snacks Harrison, and he's on the practice squad. So I think a lot of it is that these guys haven't been doing they haven't been doing a ton of on-field football workouts because of the ongoing pandemic issues. So instead, they're getting some work in and kind of getting back into football shape over probably 2 to 3 weeks before they make a decision if they're still able to go at a rate that they would like them to go at.
Do you think that the addition of Amukamara, is this just a case of throwing stuff at the fan, checking to see what sticks on the wall, or do they really have potentially? I mean, Vance Joseph made the comment about TJ Ward. It was a move made with an eye to the future. I'm not saying future like next year, but probably, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 weeks down the line to maybe being a contributor. Do you think that's one of these cases, or do they really have plans of working him in and possibly getting him in the lineup?
You know, I think that they probably have ideas of getting him into the lineup. I mean, like I said, this week they haven't been great by any means in terms of pass coverages. You know, and this last week was clearly the you saw that this last week when they just didn't, you know, make plays on the ball, and in turn you had the Jets just not making plays on the ball either. And so I think a guy like Amukamara has been a solid, steady pro for his career, a guy that, you know, you can see as a continued, high level type of player. And I think high level, but competent NFL player. And so I think, you know, having him here and potentially TJ Ward even, you know, gives them options that they didn't have before.
All right, moving on then. Coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about Week 6, Monday Night Football, Dallas Cowboys, but unfortunately not with Dak Prescott. Still one of the most high-powered offenses in the league. Terrible defense. That will preview this game, the matchups, and our predictions. That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cowboys are the Cardinals' next opponent on Monday Night Football, a game between two teams who can move the ball. Dallas has been scoring points like crazy. CeeDee Lamb, oh my gosh, it has fueled the fire as to why didn't the Cardinals draft CeeDee. They're also, Dallas is absolutely atrocious defensively. So let's kind of talk about that. Now, first, you can't help but just feel for the young man when Dak Prescott, you know, fractured his ankle on that play. And the first thing I thought is, oh, I hope it is not an Alex Smith injury. Obviously, he's getting paid a ton of money this year, $31 million on the franchise tag, but he didn't get that long-term deal that someone at his point in his career should get. And now you have to wonder how that's going to affect negotiations moving forward. And so the Cardinals get a face, Andy Dalton. Do you think that Cowboy offense loses much with Dalton at quarterback? Because I honestly don't. Dalton is a talented player who is not necessarily a big elevator, but as we saw with his first 5 years with the Bengals, he was pretty solid, took him to the playoffs, and they do have talent on offense, and he can deliver the ball to his playmakers.
Yeah, I think the difference is going to be, they're probably not going to throw for over 380 yards a game, which is what they do right now. But I do think that they're going to up their run production, which is only at 106 yards per game. I think you might, you know, probably lose, let's say, 80 yards. So they're right around 300 yards rushing. I don't think they're going to gain 300 yards passing. I don't think they're going to gain 80 yards rushing, but I could see 40. So, you know, where you're at 300 and 150 a game, and that's still an incredibly high-powered offense. So I do think it'll take away some of their points per game. But I do wonder if it'll cut down on the turnovers. You know, Dak was having a fantastic season, as you said. But, you know, he's thrown four interceptions, including, you know, all four in the last three games, you know, two against Seattle in that loss, one against Cleveland in their loss to Cleveland, and then one against the Giants before the injury. The other thing is that the offensive line has been just decimated by injuries. Right now, both of their starting tackles are out. That's Tyron Smith, who's, you know, a multi-time All-Pro, and Lyle Collins, a young guy that they just re-signed recently to, you know, a massive contract. You know, both of those guys aren't playing right now. I don't know if they'll be back this week. I honestly don't know what their injuries are.
Well, Tyron Smith's done for the year. He's okay. Having surgery, so he's done. Now, that's really a kind of a bummer, because you were thinking about a huge matchup advantage for the Cardinals with Chandler Jones over there. And instead, you're going to get – now, you'll probably see Devon Kennard over there, so that's still a plus. But the Kylie Fitz or Hassan Reddick versus backup left tackle for the Cowboys does not have the same sizzle as Chandler Jones versus Tyron Smith.
And you know, Lyle Collins is out too, so he just had surgery as well. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting – interesting game because I think weaknesses are lining up at this point where you look at it and you go, okay, this is a team that's, you know, missing their, you know, their two starting tackles. They moved, I believe they moved Zach Martin out to right tackle, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to double check that, but and so, you know, you look at the overall build of this Cowboys team, and man, they're really, really good at putting up yards and numbers, but at the same time, they just, they don't stop a soul. I mean, defensively,
a hapless Giants offense put up 24 points on them.
Yeah, I mean, you just start there. They give up 36 points per game. 36. That's basically unheard of in the NFL to allow 5 touchdowns a game. You know, you look at the pass yards. You know, they're giving up. They're 20th in pass yards given up. They're 27th in rushing yards given up, which is, again, astonishing. They points per drive, they're almost at the bottom of the league. I mean, they're just in a incredibly odd place, and they kind of remind me of the Kansas City Chiefs a couple years ago, where their defense was just so bad that you basically expected 40 to 42 type of scores coming out of this game. Now I won't say that's what's going to happen, because it's really hard to score that many points even against a bad team every game. But when you look at the fact that their offensive line's really decimated by injuries, their defense right now is a shell of what they were expecting it to be. I mean, Jalen Smith played really well last week, but he had had a really bad start to the season. You know, I look at this team and I see an opportunity for the Arizona Cardinals to kind of come out and make a statement. And though the statement won't be as loud, I still think it would be a strong statement to what we're expecting of this Cardinals team. Because you and I had this game marked down as a loss. Again, the availability of Dak Prescott changes that dramatically. The Cardinals come into this game as 2.5-point favorites, which, let's be honest, is completely mind-boggling.
Right. They've been favored every week since week one, which, crazy. Like, if you entered the season, that was surprising completely. But yes, the favored on the road in Dallas.
In primetime.
Right.
And 2.5 is, that's a lot for a road dog. It really is. For a team that's 3-2 and not, I mean, I'm not trying to sell Arizona short by any means, because they've played well and they're doing well enough. But when you just look at the fact that you're talking about, you know, the 16th ranked scoring offense against the third, you know, just overall defensive yards per game, you know, I think people are expecting the Cardinals defense to slow down the Cowboys Dakless offense enough. And, you know, you look at the numbers, again, the overall gross numbers, it really does favor the Cardinals defense in terms of, you know, fifth in scoring, fifth in passing defense. But I mean, the Chandler Jones injury, they're not going to be going up against the 49ers wide receivers that they saw in week one. They're not going to be going up against, the Washington football team wide receivers that they saw in week two. They're not going to be going up against the Jets receivers that they saw this week. And we've seen in the two games where they've gone up against talented receivers that they have struggled to consistently get stops in the passing game. Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, and Michael Gallup are perhaps the best trio of receivers in the NFL. And the Carolina Panthers trio of Robbie Anderson,
DJ Moore,
and Curtis Samuel, you know, they had a big game against the Cardinals. And so that's what makes it tough. I mean, you look at those three, they put up, you know, good numbers against the Cardinals. They had 15 catches for 199 yards. They had no touchdowns, but that's what Anderson, Samuel, and Moore had. I mean, maybe DJ Moore cracks the starting lineup in Dallas over Michael Gallup, maybe. But, I mean, Robbie Anderson, I honestly don't think any of those three would start in Dallas.
Absolutely.
And they put up – so it's just – that's what I think – as you and I cover the team and watch and we see those kind of warts on there, you worry about this type of matchup where it does look like it's going to be a shootout. It feels like it's going to be a shootout. And you just wonder, because the Cardinals haven't put together, like we talked about earlier, a consistent game from quarter one to quarter four offensively, if they can keep up enough, or on the flip side, continue to get enough stops.
So this game, a couple of intangibles for this game would be both Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury's return to the Dallas area where they hail from. Cliff's going to have some juice for that game. I think Kyler is going to be amped up for that game, especially to see his buddy CeeDee Lamb, a guy who he was unapologetic about wanting the Cardinals to draft him. I think it's going to be exciting to watch. Having Andy Dalton, I will say Andy Dalton's career numbers against the Cardinals are not bad at all. He's got a passer rating in three starts of over 100, six or seven touchdowns to no interceptions in those three games. He's won one of them of the three games, including last year. The Cardinals beat them, beat the Bengals last year with a Kyler Murray comeback with that big run late in the game. And I'm super excited for this game. It is as bad as that Dallas defense has been. It really is. Here's the thing that's critical. They need to get out to a lead, because the Cowboys have played from behind all year, and you don't want to allow them to be able to lean on Ezekiel Elliott in the second half and be able to ground and pound, like what I think they kind of will want to do with Andy Dalton. But if you force Andy Dalton to have to come back, you are going to eventually get the turnovers. And while Dallas has been phenomenal in the fourth quarter this year in terms of comebacks, the point is you don't want to be in a position where you kind of flip the switch and you turn it around and you flip the script and turn things around, and you're giving Dallas a scenario they haven't had all year. You know, you see them depleted at quarterback. Andy Dalton's no joke. He's better than Joe Flacco, and Joe Flacco did a few things. And so, but honestly, I expect a big scoring game. If there's one thing, if we're looking at the line, I think the over under set at 54.5. that is, for me, an easy over. Now, I thought the same thing against San Francisco and downplayed the fact that San Francisco didn't have anybody, and actually the San Francisco 49ers are kind of not good this year. But I'm excited for a lot of things. I think the Cowboys will be able to put up some volume yards in. Now, the question is going to be, can they finish those drives with touchdowns? Because the Cardinals have been stout in the red zone for most of the year. And Andy Dalton is not Dak Prescott. And so I think we might be able to see this could, I'm not going to say it will be, could be a game where the Cardinals are in control pretty much the whole game. Now, this said, I expect it to be close. I expect this to come down to the final 5 minutes, and I think it's going to be one of the better Monday night matchups this year.
Yeah, and I hope it is. I hope we get a team or a game and a chance to see these teams kind of open things up. I love defensive football, and I coach, you know, youth football, and my games resemble much of what the early 2000 Baltimore Ravens looked like in trying to run the ball 50 times a game and dare a team to score on us. And that's how, you know, I enjoy coaching and I enjoy watching football. But it is fun to watch offenses that are in sync and in rhythm playing against good defenses and defenses that are still making plays, but the offenses are just so far and above that they can't stop them. And that's what I'm hoping we get. I'm hoping we get kind of a throwback, and this isn't that long ago, obviously, but to that Chiefs-Rams, was that a Monday night or was that a Sunday night football game? But
I don't remember. You know,
but that, you know, what it was 50-something to 50-something thriller that, I mean, and that was one of the most enjoyable games to watch. And there was defense playing that game. It's just that the offenses that night were firing on all cylinders so much that it was hard to stop them. And I that's kind of what I'm hoping to see this week. Obviously, more than that, I would love just to see another Cardinals complete dominant victory. And if they're kind of on that path, but if we're going to get a game, I hope it's not a game where it's Andy Dalton trying to find his rhythm and the Cardinals struggling to be, you know, kind of continuation on offense. And so that's where I'm at heading into this game. And when you look at it, it's, for me, it's a coin toss. I'm still struggling to completely dive in and buy in to this Arizona Cardinals team. Not that they're bad by any means, but I'm struggling to buy into the fact that this is a team that can compete for a playoff spot. And while I don't think Dallas is either, on the road on Monday night, it just, I mean, we talked about it before the season. This wasn't a game we had circled as a win. We were hoping this would be a statement game where they showed that they were close and that they belonged. I don't want to change that perspective because I think it's dangerous because we did that after the first two games and then we went, oh, this team sucks. Instead of just saying like, hey, we overcorrected. Instead of saying, okay, San Francisco's not quite as good as we expected, and they beat a bad Washington team. That you say, you know, and then you lose a close one to Detroit, and then you just have a clunker against Carolina. That you look at it and go, okay, I still want this team to show that they belong on the same field as Dallas. I don't want them to get blown out. I don't want them to be embarrassed. I want them to have a chance to win the game at the end. And I think that's the mentality. I mean, obviously on game day, I'm going to change that and expect a win and all of those things. But I think that's the mentality I'm trying to go in with to this game. And you know, something like a 37-35 loss isn't going to me be the end of the world. You know, as long as it's with everybody coming out healthy and knowing that they, you know, they lost to maybe the most complete passing game in the NFL, even though it is Andy Dalton now, I think I would be okay with. But again, I'll probably change my tune on the next podcast if they lose 37-35. So
is that your prediction? They're going to lose 37-35?
I think so, yeah.
And I'm going to go with the Cardinals do make the statement that they need to, but it's not going to be easy. It'll be like the Dallas games with C. I see the Cardinals getting out ahead, and I see Dalton rallying them, but it's not going to be enough. 37-31 Cardinals with the win on Monday night. Going to be a barn burner. It's going to be all sorts of excitement. I think Kyler Murray has a fantastic game, and I think we get a good game from Kenyon Drake as well against that defense. With that, let's go ahead and wrap this show. We'll be back again next week, fresh off the ideally the win or the loss, as they will play Monday night, and we will record Tuesday night. That'll wrap up this edition of episode 282 of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.